Welcome to my platform, Metro.co.uk's new podcast, where we speak to the authors of some of our first person and opinion section's most read articles of the past few years. My platform is all about drawing attention to underheard and underrepresented voices in the media, talking about issues close to their heart. Hosted by me, Jess Austin. I edit the section of Metro that all of our lovely guests submitted their pieces to. As well as being among the most popular articles, they're also some of my absolute favourites, and I can't wait to speak to the authors more about what inspired them, unhindered by a pesky word count. In this series, we'll be having thought-provoking discussions about issues like drag queens performing to kids, pretty privilege, and the problematic side of fake tanning. We'll also be shining a light on people's lived experience, covering adoption, HIV diagnoses, and finding love after loss. This week, we're welcoming Cecilia Florin to the podcast. Cecilia is an administration officer, and today we're going to be discussing her piece, I'm 45, work 3 jobs, and know that I will never be able to afford to retire. So firstly, before we delve into your piece, can you tell me a bit about yourself and what you do?
So I'm a single mother to 2 girls. Moved to the UK 7 years ago now. Found it quite difficult to get back into work. Having lived here 20 years ago in my youth and not fully understanding the consequences of saving or pensions or what your NHS number means, when workingmums.net did their survey and I answered it and they reached out to me, I realized that it's a bigger issue than just myself.
So that's relating to the Working Wise research that found that 50% of older women are going to continue working past retirement age, and over half can't imagine being financially independent on their pension. And so you just answered a poll online. Is that the first time that you started thinking about your pension and what kind of situation you'll be in when it comes to retire?
Yes, pretty much. You know, so some of the questions on the survey does make you think twice. You know, have I got a pension that's going to look after me? Do I have life insurance that's going to look after my kids if something happens to me? What kind of security are they going to have in the longer term when I'm in a situation where I'm not able to, you know, get a mortgage or buy property? So what am I leaving them? And the best thing for me leaving them is education.
We'll get onto that in a bit. You've spoken in your articles about how you're preparing your daughters. But can you tell me a bit about the jobs you currently do? So you work 3 jobs at the minute.
Yeah. So since I moved to the UK, it's been necessary to have more than one job because it's been so difficult to get back into the working scene. I've been very fortunate. I got the job with the Harbour Office, which is a great job. They offer a great pension scheme. But even on a part-time role, it wasn't enough. So I work in a pub, you know, do a couple of shifts in a pub and do a cleaning role as well to supplement our income.
I think we're all quite guilty of ignoring our pensions. I mean, this piece, researching and fact-checking this piece was, I think, the most energy I've ever put in to knowing about my pension. I now feel better prepared, but also very scared. You feel like you've ignored your pension until it kind of got too late. When is this? So you saw these stats. It was the first time you'd really thought about it. What was your knowledge of pensions like before that?
Pretty much absolutely nothing. You know, you get into a job. When I first started working, you know, you'd have to opt in. Now you're automatically opted in and you have to opt out. But you put this money, and unless anyone has actually explained to you what the deduction is, I've had 6-7 pension offering jobs, but I don't know all the information about what I've put in and where it is. And that's my fault. You know, if when you're at school and you're doing your GCSEs and your A-levels and you're going out into the real world, I think one of the conversations needs to be when you get signed into a job and they offer you a pension and you either take it or don't, you understand the reason behind it, understand that you have to manage it and look after it. I've got pensions out there that I don't know how to find again without, well, you can do it. You can find them. But it's only until now that I realized that I can actually go out and say, well, I worked for XYZ for 3 years, paid into a pension. We didn't have email and things back when I first started. You didn't have all the internet logins, and paperwork gets lost. And it's, if you have a clearer perspective when you walk out from school and just know, manage those emails, look at the statements that you get every year, decide whether you want to combine or add in order to make sure that you have a reasonable pension when you do retire. And the retirement age keeps changing, so who knows when that's going to be. So when you turn 16, you get an NI number. And if you work and you earn over a certain amount, you make contributions. Does a 16-year-old know what those NI contributions mean? And if you do what I did and then go and live abroad for many years and you don't continue paying into the NI, you lose out on the end result?
Firstly, you said that you feel like it's your fault for not looking into your pension, but I don't think that's the case. The language around it is so inaccessible. I only have 2 pension pots and I have no idea like about how to combine them or anything like that. I think, as you said, it's about explaining it to people when they leave school. They're aware of the language, they're aware of the terminology. But yeah, there are so many different facets to pensions that make it even more complicated and hard to understand if you've never been taught. So just for anyone who's listening to this podcast who, again, like us, has kind of insufficient knowledge on pensions, you've got your private pensions, which you can get through work, but then there's also the state pension. And to my understanding, you can qualify for the state pension after making 10 years of contributions to your national insurance, but you also need to be earning above a certain level. And you need to work for 35 years to qualify for the full amount. So you can work for 10 years and get a lower rate pension, but if you work a full 35 years, you can get the full amount, which at the minute, as of this year, is £203.85 a week. As you said, in your situation, at the minute, you wouldn't qualify for the full amount because you haven't worked in the UK for 35 years or made contributions for 35 years. And that's because you lived abroad. And when you live abroad, you can make voluntary contributions to your national insurance that you would miss from not working in the UK. But again, you didn't have the knowledge about that because no one really tells you about that. Do you mind telling me about when you moved abroad, why, when you came back, all of that as well, please?
When I moved abroad, I didn't understand if I just made a small contribution every month to my national insurance, I'd be covered. You go and work abroad, where I worked, you don't get pensions. Okay, so I was in Kenya. It's a complicated story for me because I'm not from here. I came here. I lived here. I left. I came back. It's scary how much information you should know. Well, not should know, but just, you know, it would help in the future. My daughter, my eldest, she's 20. She's got a national insurance number. Been to school. She's worked. Sometimes paid in, sometimes not. Now she's working abroad and she's not paying into it. I don't know. I find it a really complicated situation. My youngest, she's doing business studies now and they do a lot about economy and, you know, saving and whatnot. So perhaps things are changing slightly and they are getting a bit more information.
It shouldn't take doing a specific business course to kind of have that information at hand, I suppose. I mean, at school, PSHE lessons where you had someone from outside come in to explain a different part of living life as an adult to you, but pensions never really seem to be touched on. So I completely understand that just dearth of information out there. But when you moved back to the UK, you mentioned you struggled to get a job, which meant accepting a lower paid role initially. And in that role, were you earning enough to hit the state pension threshold?
Like I said, you know, I had to take roles that are beneath my capabilities and skills and qualifications and experience. And if you're on a certain level of pay, you have a certain level of contributions. Again, you're not clear on it unless you know yourself. You know, it's just my boyfriend, he's self-employed. So he doesn't, you know, he does his tax returns and pays in whatever, but he doesn't have a private pension from a job unless he goes out there, creates one for himself. He doesn't have that extra bit to stand on. And how are you going to live on 200 and something pound a week in this day and age?
Unless you are a mortgage-free homeowner, sizable, like, assets. Yeah, how do you... Bills, the cost of living crisis, food, rent, just surviving. It's not an awful lot of money, really.
No, well, you can't. I don't think there's anyone who can survive on less than £1,000 a month, unless, like you say, they're mortgage-free. But even being mortgage-free, the cost of energy, the cost of food, if you have children, I mean, no one can live on that.
Retirement age is 66, and you see yourself working well past that. How does that make you feel?
It is what it is. You know, if you understood more at a younger age, maybe you would make some wiser decisions, and then you wouldn't have to. You know, we all have to work to live, but if you actually understood some of the financial culpabilities, then you could plan a little bit better. And it's what I say to my girls, you know, they're both working 15 and 20, and they're both working a fiver a week, you know, or a month even, whatever. Just put that aside, seek the advice, go and ask people that understand, you know, I mean, even if it's a job center or the bank or, but just go and talk to someone who actually understands a little bit more, but just know that the help is there. I mean, I was after your article in the Metro, there was a lot of feedback, you know, there was a lot of negative comments, positive comments. I got some great feedback. So like via my LinkedIn, you know, Octopus Money, Octopus Energy, they have another scheme called Octopus Money Manager. And they actually reached out to me and they said, you know, we saw your story and we'd be happy to sort of give you a bit of advice for the next year, some financial coaching for free, which they would normally charge. They offered me, you know, so I have a coaching session once every 3 months with advice on various things I should do, not just the pensions, but having a will, how I can maximize my income, how I can save it better way. And that's been amazing, you know, to get that kind of support has been incredible. So I will give a shout out to Octopus for that.
I'm really glad that you got some really positive feedback as well with the article. And one of the things you mentioned in your article was that you'd love to have a financial advisor. But again, that just eats into costs and money. So it's really brilliant that you've now got this service for free. And the knowledge that you've gained from that, have you been passing that on to your daughters as well as the education that you feel that they haven't necessarily been given through school? Are you now passing on the lessons that you're learning?
Yeah, 100%. But I do strongly feel that it would be a great benefit if schools just give you that little bit of an edge You know, you leave school at 16 or 18 and you're naive as whatever, you know, you're going out to have fun and enjoy life. As long as, you know, somebody's just said, you know, if you just do this one little thing, it will change everything for you in the future.
I mean, I think it's really interesting how differently everyone is prepared around, or has knowledge around finances. You know, my partner, for example, every time I try and get a new card or a new account or anything like that, I make sure that he is there to read it over and tell me if I'm making the right move, because I just feel completely out of my depth when it comes to finding the best ways to navigate money. And I think that's why like Martin Lewis is so popular, because he helps break it down and help people understand it. But there are some people who have grown up with talking about money or being a bit more, or having lessons from their parents about that, or doing money subjects in school or university, who feel comfortable with it. But there are so many people who just feel completely out of the loop. And it's, you know, it feels a little bit like with money, once you understand the cards, it's easier. There are ways to like make money work for you. But if you don't have that knowledge, you're just going to end up on the back foot. You're obviously planning for the future. What age do you realistically think you'll be able to retire?
To be honest, I don't have a clue. We'd all like to be able to retire, you know, and everyone's living longer. You know, if you retire in your 60s, you might be lucky enough to have 20 years of leisure. I mean, does anyone ever really retire? I don't know. No, my mother is going to be 80 this year. Is Swedish, but she lives in Kenya. In Kenya, she doesn't get anything. She lives on a very basic state pension that she gets from Sweden. It's not enough. And so I need to supplement her income in order for her to lead an ordinary life. Yeah, no, we're not all going to be millionaires and whatnot, but you just want to be comfortable and know that your bills are paid, your rent's paid, you've got food on the table, and it's proving to be harder and harder as time goes on, in my mind. I mean, yeah, win the lottery.
Since your financial advice sessions, have you been able to work out how to manage your private pensions as well and collate that information, work out whether it's best to combine them, get just on top of the private pensions that you have?
I've been given very good guidance, you know, and some of it's like, sometimes it's better to just, but you need to look at it. So sometimes it's better to just leave them in their individual pots. You could combine, you could go with like Pension B. I mean, there's loads of different organizations which will combine your pensions and give you advice, but everyone's in it for something, right? So they're not doing that for nothing. And sometimes some advice I've been given is sometimes it's better to just leave them on their own and let them grow on their own. But you need to keep an eye and you need to manage them. So you need to look at the statements. You need to look at what you put in. You need to determine whether that one you should put a bit more into, or that one you should put a bit more into. That's like a full-time job in itself. You can take the money out early, you can cash it in, but you can only do that if you understand how to understand what they're doing with your money.
Aside from that, what other top tips did you get that you'd also like to share with people listening to this podcast who find themselves completely clueless about money?
When you turn 16 and you get your NI number, realize that that's actually your first step in adulthood, and you do need to make some personal decisions. And if you're lucky enough to have a part-time job or whatnot, you know, look at the options. Log into your HMRC account. Understand what it does for you. Talk to people about how you can better invest your money, whether it's in a pension or an ISA or putting it under the mattress. I mean, honestly, but talk to people. And that is one of the biggest messages I think that has been going around. Don't be shy to talk about money, because it's what makes the world go round right now.
And especially, I suppose, for anyone considering a move abroad, if you plan on coming back to the UK, or you just want the safety net of a state pension, make sure you're paying in so you get that full 35 years and you get that full £203.85 a week.
Yeah, no, 100%. You know, if you do end up going away, something in every month to keep you on top.
In the comments, you said there are a lot of positive tips and a lot of people offering help, but there are a lot of people who said that they were in exactly the same position. How did that make you feel?
Again, it's, you know, either we're just being ignorant or just didn't get enough information or never really understood. You get your first job and you start earning a salary. Well, what are you going to do? You're going to go out and go clothes shopping or go out with your friends. You're not thinking about, oh, actually, I better, you know, put something aside, because it's so easy to not think about tomorrow. It's, but then thinking about tomorrow isn't just about doing that. It's about all the other things as well. You know, the minute you're in a position where you actually have something, you know, don't get hit by a bus tomorrow. What happens to what you've got? And nobody knows about it. And it's just all money lost. So it's just have a plan, you know, and make sure you keep that plan up to date. So circumstances change it.
Yeah, that was one of the things that you mentioned, actually, when you were talking about discovering that you just, about the state of your pension, that your first thought was, I need to protect my daughters. And you're doing that through giving them education about money, but you took out life insurance and also to protect yourself against illness at work.
Yeah, well, again, I mean, the whole conversation made me realize that, you know, if anything happens to me, what happens to them? I mean, life insurance and critical illness cover and stuff, it feels like lost money sometimes, because you pay it in and unless anything happens to you, you're never going to get it back. However, if something does happen to you, then the people you love left to deal with everything by themselves. It's an expenditure that, you know, sometimes you can't afford. But if you look into it early enough, if you actually take out life insurance at the age of 20 instead of the age of 46, your premiums are low. And you can carry on paying those low premiums for the next 20 to 60 years. Whereas if you only realize it at the age of 46, 50, where the parameters have changed, you will pay more, and it's just a standing order or direct debit out of your account, but it just means that someone you love and someone you care about will have something to fall back on. You can leave a will, you can have a will, but if you haven't got anything to leave in the will, you're not leaving them anything. If you don't have a property, but if anything happens to me, at least my girls have got the life insurance policy I leave them. And so they're not left by themselves to all of a sudden have to figure out everything from scratch. So, yeah, again, pensions, life insurance, think about it early. Get those premiums in whilst they're low. And, yeah, if you do a direct debit or a standing order, it's money that was never there. You know, it's just, but one day you have no idea, it might come in and just save the day.
I mean, your article really inspired me to start looking into my pension as well. I mean, I started reading about it to fact check, but I did find it, I mean, the government website, I did find it quite accessible in a way that I hadn't previously when thinking about pensions before on my, you know, yearly statements. All of those numbers, all of those percentages, all of that confused me. Looking at it, taking an hour to sit down and read about it did help me understand it. And looking at, you know, you've raised a lot of questions in your piece in the comments as well. There are a lot of people answering them, and that was really lovely to see. I really wanted to thank you for sharing your story, because loads of people related. We got so many emails and comments and views for this piece with just people saying it resonated. So as you said, we need to not be ashamed to talk about money. If you talk to people about it, it becomes easier to understand. So thank you so much, Cecilia. I really appreciate you coming on the podcast.
No, thank you, Jess. And yeah, like I said, just ask, talk, you know, don't be ashamed, and just if you can, you can. If you can't, you can't. But whatever little bit you do could change your life and the people you love.
Thanks for listening to my platform. Please leave us a rating and a review. It really helps people to find the podcast. Our main aim with this podcast is to give a platform to underheard voices, offering human first stories. We'd love to hear if Cecilia's story helped shape your worldview. If so, please let us know on Twitter at MetroOpinion or by email at platform@metro.co.uk. My platform is produced by Pineapple Audio Production. I'm Jess Austin. Thanks for listening.